You're listening to How I Grow with the Seed Collection. My name is Gemma, and today I'll be speaking with Penelope from Queen Penelope's Patch on Instagram. We'll be delving into Penelope's organic backyard journey with her and the lessons she's learned along the way. Thank you so much for being with us today, Penelope.
Hey, Gemma, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
I am blushing like the tomatoes that are growing in the garden.
Oh, I love it. I love it. So excited to be speaking with you today. I can't wait to learn more about how you grow. And in fact, after seeing photographs of your produce, I actually plan on taking some notes. So I guess I'd like to start by asking, what inspired you to garden and why is it important to you?
So I've always loved gardening from the time I was a child. I would see these aunties of mine grow little flowering plots, plants and stuff in pots. And I like that. And what intrigued me more than anything else was to be able to see life grow out of a tiny seed and see it blossom and grow. And just every step of it, like right from a flower, it would grow into a fruit. The whole process kind of got me intrigued. And what I learned from a young age was that I actually have green fingers because every seed that I would get and I'd put in the ground, it would grow. That just got me more interested. It got me more interested. There'd be times when I would just take a tomato, I would throw the seeds, and I would see the plants grow. But because I lived in an apartment, back in the day, people didn't have that big gardens in apartments. They're a thing now. But back then, I would grow the seedlings, and I'd give it to my friend who had a garden, and I would say, grow this. And they would grow it. So I always knew I had green fingers. It was something that I always wanted to do. I always wanted to have my own garden. And it's once I moved over to this country and we bought our first house. While buying the house, I was looking for the basic things you want in the house, a nice big kitchen. And when I saw the backyard, I thought, oh, this backyard looks huge. This is a plus point. I didn't know how much the garden would evolve. It was not in my plan that it would evolve so much over the last 15 years, but it's just done that. And I love it. It's my space.
Oh, beautiful. That sounds very special. So when you say your garden has evolved, could you talk to us a little bit about how it started out and what it looks like today?
Yes, absolutely. Oh, wow. Going back memory lane, flashbacks. When we bought the house, we had nothing in the garden. It was a blank canvas. There was weeds that were knee high. That was the main patch. And on the sides of the garden, we had these succulents, kalanchoe, which was growing along with a lot of pebbles. On another side, we had rose bushes that were growing. And the one advice that I got, because you know how sometimes you want to go and start gardening and you think, oh, yep, I'm going to buy everything and put it in and it's all going to grow. It doesn't always work that way because it's expensive. Let's be honest, it's expensive. It is time consuming and it's a commitment.
Indeed.
The best advice that I got back then was divide your garden into different parts and work on each one, each section. And the first thing I did was I started with fruit trees. I love fruits. So that's the first thing I started. We started off with 5 fruit trees.
Yeah.
And then I wasn't working back then. So, you know, gardening is a bit pricey. So for me, I had to meticulously sit down and say, all right, what do I want? Have this little garden budget. The day I got my first job in the next 2 months, I looked at my husband and I said, all right, I want to do the garden. Can we do this? What if I lose my job? Let's do the garden now. Let's get it done. We took 10 days off and we transformed the garden straight away. We already had the fruit trees in. We had a few plants on the side. We put a lawn in. We put 2 massive veggie beds. And we thought, yep, this looks fantastic. For 2 people, this is enough. That was the initial stage.
Yeah.
What my husband did not know, and I'll tell you, he's a very patient man, was over the last few years after, and I was scheming different ideas in my head.
I love it.
I was looking at the garden, I was looking at the sides, and I'm thinking, you know what? We have all of this space. I really want to put it to use. The first thing I did then after that was the side where we had a pergola, I started putting fruit trees in there. I put a pear tree, I've got a guava tree in there, and I've got a pomegranate tree because I wanted to have that nice that nice sitting place, you know, where you're sitting in the pergola and you have the fruit trees laden with fruit. You can go and pluck out a fruit and eat. That was the vision in my head.
Yeah, that sounds ideal.
It does. It is magic. I love it.
It is. It is a form of magic. It's like what you were saying earlier, watching your aunties grow things from seed and then develop into the flower and fruit. It really does feel like a form of magic sometimes, doesn't it?
It does. The last site that we transformed, that I would say during COVID time, was what we call as Raspberry Lane.
Oh.
Which is about a 20-meter strip that we have at the side of the house. And, you know, every house has that 20-meter strip where you either just throw mulch or you'll put some yuccas in there. But I saw potential because what I saw was the daylight. You get that part of the garden gets just a little bit of sunlight, good enough for about 5-6 hours. And I thought, you know what? What's the best that can grow here? Raspberries. Let's put every colored berry that I can think of in here and see what happens. It's been a massive berry patch. We fondly call it Raspberry Lane because it has every color berry that we have growing in it. I have more berries than I can eat.
Oh, wonderful.
I have more berries than I can eat. I end up giving it to friends. I end up making muffins to take to work, berry muffins to take to work, and I end up freezing them and using them throughout the year.
Oh, lovely. And I'm sure your colleagues were pleased with that.
Oh, they have high expectations, I'll tell you that. Ah. But yeah, I do like sharing stuff, so I don't mind doing it.
Beautiful. So cooking is also a part of your gardening journey, is that right?
I love to eat, so definitely cooking is part of my journey, cooking, yes. Preserving food.
Oh, lovely. There's nothing quite like the taste of your homegrown produce, is there?
Absolutely. And I'll tell you, I grew greedy over the last couple of years with that. The last bit that we had was the lawn. And I managed to convince my husband saying, you know what? We don't have kids. Why do we have a lawn? Why do we have a lawn? I do not want to have a lawn. I don't want to give out my age, but I'm at that age where you think like, you know, if you don't do this now, when are you going to do it? And that's when he said, okay, I managed to convince him to get rid of the lawn.
Ooh.
We got rid of the lawn, which was such a big deal. And we managed to put in about 7 more beds.
So in total,
I now have 15 garden beds.
Oh my goodness, I love it. So what kind of land are you working with there, Penelope? Is it quite a large block?
It's a regular suburban block. I would say that the garden itself would be around maybe 200 meters.
Oh, okay.
200 square feet, somewhere around there, yeah.
That's excellent. So in addition to your berries and the fruit trees, are you growing vegetables or...?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I love growing vegetables.
Lovely. So what kind of things do you currently have in your garden?
At the moment, being summer, we've got everything summer that's growing. I love growing things that you don't get in the market.
Yes.
Stuff that's not commercial, like tomatoes, different color tomatoes, different flavors, different sizes. That whole rainbow on the plate is something that I like looking at. So different colored tomatoes. We've grown cucumbers. I have to tell you, they are my arch enemy. They give me trouble year on year, but this year they're being good.
Oh, what kind of challenges do you face with the cucumbers?
My biggest challenge with cucumbers is once I grow them from a seedling and I put them in the ground, either they are stunted or they grow, they don't pollinate, and they die off. And I've always wondered, why was that the cause?
Oh, okay. So sometimes a lack of pollination can be caused by a reduced number of bees and pollinators in the area. So that could be occurring. Have you ever hand pollinated your plants?
I do. I find cucumbers a bit dicey, but I have learned a little secret to it.
Oh, what's your secret?
I can tell you.
Please.
What I've done this year, I'll tell you, is I realized that with the soil that we had in one of our garden beds, it is the word that is called hydrophobic. Hydrophobic means when you put water on the soil, it runs off. The soil doesn't absorb it. So that was one of the main problems. And what I've learned is you've got to fix that before you can even put your plants in. So what we did this year was we used a whole lot of homemade compost.
Lovely.
We use manure and we use coir. and we mixed it up really well. And that helped with the soil. That also helped with the plants because they were able, I noticed that they were able to grow much better this year. And we grew a lot of flowering plants around. So that definitely helped with pollination.
Oh, fantastic. Wonderful.
Yeah.
So a bit of composting and ensuring that the flowers attracting those pollinators are present.
That's correct. And the soil is everything. It's something that I guess we don't generally pay attention to. We take it for granted, but really your soil is everything.
That's very true. Lots of people do overlook the soil. We sometimes tend to think, oh, well, there's some dirt we can plant in it, but it's not always that simple, is it?
That is correct.
Yeah, there's quite a lot to ensuring that the nutrient levels in your soil are correct, and particularly for what you're trying to grow too. Different things require different levels.
Absolutely, absolutely. And worms, you have to see worms in your soil. You know that soil is good when you see those worms wriggling out.
Yes, lovely. You mentioned earlier, Penelope, moving to the country and to this country and the differences in gardening there. Are you happy to share a little bit more about that, where you've come from and what the differences are?
Yes, absolutely. So now, if I tell you my heritage, I'm Indian.
Yes, yeah.
I was born and brought up overseas in the Gulf. And the place that I'm used to over there, I've always lived in an apartment. So I had more of an indoor garden. I wasn't able to really grow fruits and veg back home because, again, it was difficult. There was lack of knowledge. There wasn't much knowledge. The time when I started to expand my garden collection in India was when I used to go to my mother-in-law's house, my then mother-in-law's house. Well, she said my mother-in-law. Because while I had to pass a house, there were about 6 nurseries in a line.
Oh, lovely.
And I used to go meet her. And after that, I used to spend the rest of the next few hours just going through the nurseries, learning about plants, trying to understand the structure, the soil, everything else. I'm originally from Bombay. So for me, I'm used to tropical plants. I'm used to tropical plants, tropical fruits. The flavor is so sweet. I'll tell you, in India, if you buy a papaya, it is like sugar. Ooh, it's like eating sugar, even mango. Guavas, everything. Mangoes are, and you know what? There are so many different types of mangoes in India. It's insane.
Oh, wow. Wow. Did you have a favorite?
There's one called as the Alfonso mango.
Okay.
It is the sweetest. You can, when you smell the top of the mango, it should smell like sugar.
Oh,
and that's
yum.
How you know it'll be sweet.
Lovely. So you mentioned you learned about soil and things like that early on in the piece. So you really started from the ground up, so to speak.
I did. And you know what? What I've realized as well is that you have to learn by looking at your plants, because I feel like plants actually talk to you. They tell you when they need something. Like my lemon tree is very vocal. She'll tell me if she needs iron, if she needs magnesium. She'll throw a tantrum and drop leaves if it's too hot because she wants water. And then I'm like, okay, I get you. So,
what are some of those cues in terms of a plant lacking magnesium and things like that? What would she say to you? How would she communicate that with you?
She would show me yellowing between the veins. It could be either yellowing between the veins or yellowing on the outside of the leaf where you can see that there's more green between the veins, but a slight hint of yellow. So not to confuse myself, I give them both. Keep them happy. I'm like, here is your magnesium, here is some iron. And you know what? It's not just lemon trees, but it's any tree. It's any tree. I find that a plant performs much better when you give them magnesium, especially at the seedling stage. That's what I do with my tomato seedlings. Like, you can grow them in a tiny pot, in that seedling pot, only for some time. But there's only so much nutrients that little pot will carry. So you have to keep topping it up. You have to keep looking at the leaves, looking for signs, seeing if there are fungal diseases, and treat it accordingly.
Very true indeed. So what do you apply to increase the magnesium levels?
You can buy magnesium from the store. Like, they call this Epsom salts. You get them at Bunnings. Yeah, it's just a plain packet. They're like little white salts. You can just buy them and apply them. If you want it to work quicker, you get it in liquid form as well, where you can just pour it and the plant can absorb the nutrients directly. But I just go the powder way. I just prefer to sprinkle some powder every quarter, keeps everyone happy.
Yes. Yes. Lovely. Thank you. And when you mentioned before the tomato plants, while we're on nifty tricks, have you ever heard of burying a banana peel at the base of the tomato plant?
I've heard that. I've heard about the banana. I've heard about the egg.
Oh, the egg. I haven't heard that one.
There is the egg. There's fish heads as well. The banana, I dig into the soil. So what I do is, one thing I do is, I love growing lettuce and salads. And sometimes you find all of these things just tend to go to seed with a change in weather. That's all it requires. One hot day and it's like, oh no, I'm done for the day. So these things that go to seed, I have the habit of just, it's called the chop and drop method, where you just chop them down and you turn them over in the soil. And what that does is that breaks down. And while I do that, I try to feed in extra stuff that we have from the kitchen, all your kitchen scraps, like your watermelon rind, your banana leaves, your apple core, anything I find around the house. I'm like, yep, this can go into the soil. I will just start to turn it over into the soil.
Oh, and you find that quite effective?
I do find it effective because, again, you have the microbes in the soil that break it down, and then it all becomes compost. So you have nice, soft soil because of the microbes, the earthworms.
Beautiful. Lovely. So what has been one of your biggest challenges in the garden, Penelope? Perhaps a failure that you would be happy to talk about that others can learn from?
Growing chilies, I have to say, growing chilies, I love chilies. Being Indian, chilies are my thing. So when I was not able to grow chilies, I was worried. I was like, this is not right. This should happen automatically. Why is this happening? But there are tricks to it.
There are some tricks. The soil temperature is the most common hurdle that I've found with the chilies. Yeah, they need a nice hot temperature in the soil to germinate. Which can stump some gardeners.
That is correct. And also with that, I've learned that in Melbourne, you've got to start early.
Yes.
You have to start early. You cannot wait for like October to put your seeds in. You have to start, like I'll tell you, I personally start in at the end of June, beginning July. That's when I start putting my seeds in potting mix, put it on a heat mat till it germinates. It just starts to pop out, and then move it into individual little pots and underneath a grow light.
Oh, so you have found a way to overcome that challenge with the chilies then.
Correct.
Wonderful, wonderful. And I'm sure they don't go to waste in the kitchen either. As you say, you love to eat them.
I have to tell you, I don't buy chilies anymore. I just grow them and I freeze them.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. I like preserving food. I enjoy preserving food.
Yeah, I think it's a very important skill to learn too. Do you have a favorite method, Penelope?
If I'm doing tomatoes, it would have to be the canning method, wherein you make a puree of your tomatoes. So you boil them till they become really thick. I tend to blend them after that, and then while the puree is hot, you put them in jars. So your jars also have to be hot. They'd have to go into an oven at 100 degrees.
Yeah.
So that they are warm. So they always say your liquid or whatever you're putting into the jar needs to be warm. So warm liquid, warm jar, put in a jar.
Yeah.
And then I would seal it. I would just put the cap on and close and leave it on the table. And it pops automatically. Some people use something called as the Fowler method, where they put the jars in boiling water. And I used to do that. But I don't do that anymore because I find that both methods actually work. But one thing I do is I add a teaspoon of citric acid to my tomato puree because I know that that'll extend the shelf life.
Oh, very clever.
Yeah, absolutely. And anything I jar, I add a teaspoon of citric acid. That's one thing that my mom's friend had taught me a long, long time ago.
Ah, lovely. It's the beauty of shared wisdom, isn't it?
Yes,
lovely.
Absolutely.
Speaking of the beauty of shared wisdom, is there any particular plant or flower that takes you back to a special moment in your life? That could be a moment in the garden with a loved one or just something that you learned that you hold very dear.
I would have to say the one thing that I love a lot is, and I recently started to like them more, is flowers, growing flowers. It's something that I wasn't into a long time ago. And, you know, back in the day, when you buy flowers, flowers are expensive, let's be honest. You can't always buy flowers every week. My mom loves gladiolus. She loves gladiolus. We had, every vase in the house had gladiolus. Plastic, mind you, plastic, not real, ones.
Yeah.
And it was typical back in the old days that you'd put plastic over everything. So all her plastic gladiolus had plastic. And she would always tell me, I really like these flowers. I really like these flowers. So I started growing gladiolus because she likes gladiolus. And I've taken a liking to them because it reminds me of her.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. And you know what? And while she's not, and the funny part is now, while she's no more with me, she passed away 2 years ago.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, it's all right. I still grow gladiolus because of her.
What a beautiful tribute.
Yeah. And they, you know what, they flower in her birth month every year. They always flower in January. My mom was born in Jan. They flower during that time. So it's even nicer. It's special
lovely.
To me.
Lovely. That is very special. Thank you for sharing that story with us, Penelope. That's lovely. So the gladioli, would they be your favorite plant to grow?
They are, because of my mom, I wouldn't say they're my favorite. They're probably my second favorite. My favorite plant would be my mandarin tree, to be honest. I love my mandarin tree to death.
Oh, lovely. Is it a dwarf variety or?
He's a dwarf. He's an imperial mandarin tree.
Oh, yum.
He was a little problematic child when I bought him.
Oh.
Yep. He was a little problematic child. And I'll give you some more wisdom about citrus trees, which is what I learned as well.
Yeah.
With citrus trees, most people, when you buy the tree from the shop, if they are very advanced, you will get the fruit. You might get a few fruit, but with citrus trees, it takes 3 years for the roots to develop under the soil. And only once the base is developed, then the top will take off.
Okay.
It took me 5 years with this plant. I almost gave up because with him as well, when we bought him from the store, I didn't realize that he had, there was those leaf miners. He had leaf miners on him.
Oh, yes.
Yep.
Oh, they can be quite the hassle.
They are a bit of a pain.
Yes.
We killed the leaf miner. We put him in a spot and he was not happy because, again, citrus don't like wet feet.
Yes. Yeah.
They don't like wet feet. Wasn't happy there. Moved him somewhere else. Lost all his leaves. Sat there for 2 years. And one day I just thought, you know what? This plant is useless. Let's chuck him out, as everyone says. I went to pull him out, but he didn't come out. I tried to pull him, and I fell down on the ground pulling him. And then I said, all right. I was like, if you want to live, live. If you want to die, it's up to you. And I walked away. And in 2 months, he took off. He just took off.
Just needed some encouragement, perhaps.
That's it. That's it. And now we get at least about 300 to 400 mandarins every second year.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's wonderful. And how did you treat the leaf miner?
I do not use sprays. All I do is I flip the leaf at the back and I use my fingernail to actually crush the leaf miner.
Oh, okay. And that's quite effective?
It is effective because they die instantly. It's quicker than putting a spray and waiting. I just use my finger and just crush them off. I don't have that issue anymore because the tree is very healthy. So I feed the tree with magnesium. I give them iron. I do 6 monthly feeds as well of manure.
Oh, okay.
Plus worm compost. So I try and keep them as healthy as I can so we don't get these issues. They do come, but not often.
Yes. Oh, that's good. It sounds like you take a lot of preventative measures in the garden as well.
Yes.
Yes. It's, as they say, prevention is better than cure.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's very true. So what about, we've touched on some challenges. What about some of your triumphs or your greatest successes in the garden?
That's a good question, Gemma. That's an absolutely good question. My recent triumph would be, and I've not yet put on Instagram, but would have to be my pear tree.
Oh, pears are delicious.
Yeah. We bought this little, I think she's a pixie pear tree, one of those dwarfy ones that grows only up to 2 meters high.
Ah, yes.
We bought her about 11 or 12 years ago, and we put her in the ground. We would feed her everything possible every year, and we never got fruit.
Oh.
And we were like, what's happening? And I thought, okay, at least it's got green leaves. It looks nice. That should be fine. And then finally, my husband's like, but why aren't we getting any fruit? So we started, so we named her the Freeloader.
Oh.
So, yeah, we've like suddenly given up on the tree, thinking, yep, nothing's going to happen. And this year, the first year, we spotted pears on the tree.
Oh, lovely.
So, and it's been like, I can't believe it. Like, it's like after 12 years, you suddenly see pears.
12 years.
12 years for pears.
Wow.
I think about 7 or 8 pears that are on the tree. I've been like guarding the tree, like, don't ask. But like, all right, no critter, no wind, no lightning, nothing's going to touch these pears.
That's understandable. I think 12 years is a very long time to wait.
Yeah.
Oh, you're a patient lady, Penelope.
Oh.
Wonderful. So when it comes to your vegetable beds that you mentioned, that you now have 15 beds, what are they made up of primarily?
So I use the corrugated iron beds.
Ah, yes.
Yep. I like them because I feel like they're sturdy, they're hardy, they're good. They've lasted me a long time.
They also add a really nice rustic feel to the garden too, don't they?
They do. They certainly do. You have to be careful with your layout when you put those beds. I feel like the normal way where people put them one behind the other, and my dad called us out when he visited me last year. He looked at the beds in between, and one set that we had in between were four, sort of, there was one on the left, one on the right, then one at the back, one in the front. And he looks at it and he said, what are those coffins doing there? And I'm like, Dad, those are garden beds. They're not coffins. He's like, they look like coffins. And that's why I thought, oh, yeah, we should have thought of a nice way of designing that. But it's all right.
The beauty of hindsight, though, so.
Yes. But they're very sturdy. They're good beds, I'll tell you. They last long.
Oh, good, good. And what are you growing in those?
So with summer vegetables at the moment, we've got beans. We've got two different types of beans. We've got the yellow wax beans. We've got the purple climbing beans, the scarlet beans. We've got heaps of chilies and capsicums.
Oh, lovely.
I'm just trying to calculate. We've got 3 beds of chilies and capsicums. I like dividing my garden into sections. So at the moment we have got about, I'm just trying to think, we've got about 3 different beds of tomatoes, and because they're in a certain section, we call that Tomato Town.
Oh, okay. Suitable name.
Suitable name, because when you enter there is Tomato Town.
Yeah.
And on the corner, there is Chili Corner, because there's just chilies and capsicums going around
the
corner.
I like it, yeah.
Chili and capsicum corner. We had sunflowers. I love sunflowers. They're a bit crazy, especially when the seeds start to scatter everywhere. They just pop up, which is so beautiful to see little yellow heads all around the place.
It is lovely, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. We have onions in another bed. We have one more bed, which is full of potatoes. Full of potatoes. Love potatoes. We have zucchinis, squash. We have dahlias. We have carrots growing somewhere else. There's always spring onions in the garden because, you know, fried rice is the best thing to eat. So there has to be spring onions.
Oh, yum. Delicious. Yes, I have to agree with that. Fried rice and potatoes.
Fried rice and potatoes. Yep.
Yes, I'm a big, big fan of potatoes myself too.
Oh, really? Okay.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And it is a vegetable, so it's okay.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's a good carb. Let's call that a good carb.
That's right. Yeah.
And herbs. Herbs are everywhere around the garden.
Oh, beautiful. What herbs are you growing?
We have perpetual basil because regular basil dies with me. So perpetual yes. basil is safe.
Yes, yeah. Basil is one of my favorite herbs too.
Oh, is it? Okay. I love it.
Very
I love
versatile.
Drying it. Absolutely.
Yeah, so you do dry your herbs, and do you then grind them and use them as a seasoning, or how do you store them to keep?
I do not always grind them, so I grind a portion of them. So I'll tell you what I do. I grind, so with all the herbs I grow, so I have parsley, I have Vietnamese mint, I have basil, we have regular mint, we have bay leaves as well, ooh. Plus we have lemon myrtle. A part of these are dehydrated. I have a dehydrator, so I dehydrate them and I grind them to a powder.
Yeah.
And the rest I keep fresh. The ones which are ground, I like to add in marinades.
Oh, yes. You make the marinades yourself and add in your herbs?
Yes.
Beautiful.
That is correct. Marinades, pizza, sauces, curries, in patties, in burgers, salad dressings.
Oh, that sounds mouth-watering. I'll look forward to a dinner invite.
Oh, absolutely. Come home anytime. We're never short of food in this house, so come home anytime.
Isn't that wonderful knowing that you can rely on yourself as well for your foods, your vegetables and your herbs and fruits? And it's such a good feeling, isn't it?
It's the best feeling. And I'll tell you, that's when I felt grateful during COVID time. Especially when there was that scare that everyone was going, didn't want to go out of the house. I remember the Seedlings and Bunnings were all over seeds. People had bought seeds.
Yes.
And I had some packets of expired seeds, which I thought, oh, let's give this a try. And things grew, broccoli grew, so many things grew. And I was like, oh, this is good.
So is there anything you would like to see more of in the gardening realm? Do you think more people should be getting their hands dirty and learning about growing their own foods?
I think with today's generation, I think the youngsters need to learn more about where their food comes from and have a better appreciation towards their food, to be honest. Like, a lot of them do not know that to grow a single tomato takes you 6 months.
Yes, that's true. Understanding where our food comes from does provide a whole new appreciation for it.
Yep. I was going to say, and even if you can't grow fruit, like I have a lot of friends say, oh, I kill plants. I can't grow plants. I kill plants. Okay. Grow flowers, not for yourself, but grow them for the bees.
Yes, indeed. Yes. A lot of people too, they don't realize without them, we have no food. It's not just the flowers. It's the food that they pollinate. They are vital and they are in trouble.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite flower to grow for the bees?
At the moment, the bees love dahlias. They're enjoying dahlias. I like calendulas. I find calendulas the most reliable flower because they can grow throughout the year.
Yes. Yes. And colorful too. They add a nice pop of color to a garden, don't they?
Absolutely. It's a medicinal plant as well.
Yes.
So, yeah. It is one of the best flowers. And it itself seeds, so you don't have to do anything. It just grows by itself.
Oh, and that's a bonus.
Absolutely.
I actually had some nasturtium self-seed, and I know they can be quite difficult to germinate, nasturtiums. So anytime I see some popping up in the garden that I didn't plant, I'm very grateful, and I make sure I let it know that too. I say a little thank you.
Oh, that's cute. They are a really good flower. They do their own thing.
They do, yes, and the bees love them as well. And again, also a medicinal edible plant, the nasturtiums, a bit peppery.
Yes, absolutely. It's such a good plant that you can use for. It's a multi-purpose plant, isn't it? The leaves, the seeds, the flowers.
Indeed, yeah, and they make quite pretty decorations too. And presenting a meal, cakes or biscuits, things like that.
Yeah,
it can look quite beautiful.
That is correct.
Yeah, I do really appreciate plants that have that multi-use that you mentioned. I find that very enriching for the garden.
Yes, that is correct. Always looking for benefits. Always looking for benefits.
Yes, yeah. A bit of companion planting too. Both the calendula that you mentioned and nasturtiums, they're fantastic companion plants too for certain types. Yeah.
You can fill an empty space also in the garden. If you've got like an empty space, they can fill up that little empty space so it doesn't look bare.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, and it's quite nice too. And they can be rambling. The nasturtiums can be quite sprawling and pretty. Yeah. No, that's a very good point. There are some. I have some favourite space fillers in my garden. Do you have any in particular that are your go-tos?
I, at the moment, want to, this is my plan, to get a lot of pansies and violas and put them in.
Oh, lovely. Yes, very pretty.
Yeah, because it will self-seed as well. The garden will get more colour. That's on my wish list at the moment, because we've just been, from the time we've redone the whole garden, we've just been trying to just manage it at the moment. And I keep thinking, yep, we do need to get some more colour in the garden.
Yes, lovely. So may I ask you, Penelope, what do you personally get out of gardening? Second to the produce, of course. What does it do for you? What do you love most about it?
It keeps me happy. It just keeps me happy.
Beautiful.
It's like it's that mental happiness. It's exercise, which is another thing.
That's true, yes.
And it keeps your brain going. It's one of the things my friend was telling me about. A while ago, she said that you need to have a hobby that keeps you busy, that keeps your brain busy. Because if you have your brain busy, which is, again, always planning, thinking, oh, I need to pick this, pick that, you have your body working, it's the best thing.
It really does tick a lot of boxes, doesn't it? Like the spiritual, mental, physical.
Yes, absolutely. That's the word I was going for.
Yeah. It is. No, it's quite wonderful. And one of the best things I find is that there's always more to learn. We won't ever stop learning in the garden. And that's, I think, quite powerful.
Oh, absolutely. You can read as many books as you want, but you'll still keep learning.
Indeed, indeed. Is there anything in particular that you have learned on your journey that you would have never expected to learn?
With gardening, you require patience. You just require patience, and you can't give up, because I mean, why would you give up? If you can't give up. I've tried to give up, and I thought, you know what, this is not me. I need to do this. The chili plants that died, I was like, no, man, how can you die on me? We need to try this again.
Yeah, that's it. If at first you don't succeed,
mm-hmm. Yeah, just try it again. Just do it and expand. I think every gardener who you speak to is always looking for a way to sneak in new plants and expand. Grow something different, add more fruit. Can't sit quietly with two plants and think, yep, that's it, I'm happy.
No, it's quite addictive.
It is addictive.
But it's a good addiction in the garden. So what about future plans? Speaking of not being able to sit still, is there anything that you'd like to try with your garden in the future, Penelope?
Yes, I do want to try. It's on my list. It's one of my things to do in winter is basically plant a couple more fruit trees. I have my mind on a persimmon because I love persimmon. It is such a beautiful fruit. And a cherry tree. I've got a cherry tree, which I almost killed twice over the last 2 weeks because of the heat span.
Oh, no.
But that is the goal, to try and grow both of those fruit trees.
Lovely. So is your plan to have fruits available each season?
The funny part is it actually works out that way, and I'll tell you how it works with me. So the raspberries and the berries, and this is one thing it took me time to learn, because you don't know these things. You go into a shop and you just buy a plant, but every fruit has got three seasons. They have the early season, the mid season, and late season varieties, and I did not think about that when buying fruit trees. With my garden, luckily, it works out this way, that from the end of November till almost the end, mid of December, we get a lot of raspberries. Raspberries, blackberries, yellow berries, they continue. The whole berry season continues till December. From Feb starts the nectarines. The nectarine season starts in my garden from Feb going till about mid-March. That's when after that, the fig season starts. Fig season starts in my garden. After the fig season starts the apples. So I've got two different types of apples. I've got Pink Lady and I've got the Granny Smith. And that continues from about April, May and goes on till June. And I'm going to say it goes on, and most people wonder, why does it go on till June? Because I pick the fruit when they are the ripest, when they are red, when they're the sweetest, because that's when you'll get the flavor. Then you can store your apples for at least about 5-6 months. That's what I do in the coldest room of the house.
Yeah.
Once the apples are over, well, now we're getting pears this year. We have the pomegranates as well. Pomegranates work after that.
Oh, delicious.
And then starts the lemon and the mandarin. So we sort of have a pattern going on here for 6 months where we just have fruit from the garden.
That's wonderful. I love that. And that was an accidental reward, was it?
That was an accidental reward. That was an accidental reward.
You have to love those. You have to love them.
Yeah.
And that's one of the benefits also of taking the time, you know, to observe your garden, which is, it's also one of the principles of permaculture, is observation. To watch your garden for an entire year, so all of the season cycles pass through. And that gives you a much better connection to your garden, a deeper understanding of what's appearing when and what may need to be repositioned or is thriving in particular areas too. So it sounds like the fruit trees in your garden are very happy.
They better be. They are happy. Absolutely, absolutely.
Oh, I hope you're biting into some delicious pears in no time. I'm sure you will.
Absolutely, yep. Looking forward to it.
So is there anything, Penelope, that you were hoping I would ask you and I haven't?
Let me think about this. One thing I would like, I'll tell you one thing that I would like people to do. And I see a lot of people mostly, like once they get a lot of produce, especially new gardeners, they're most happy about, yay, I've got so much produce. What do I do with it? And people ask me as well when they see my post, they're like, oh, you've got so much of food. What do you do with it? Because there's only two of you. I think that there is an art in preservation, and people should really learn to preserve food more than anything else. I love preserving food. I love preserving food. Now, in the next 2 weekends, I will take out the potatoes from the veggie patch, and I will put them in cardboard boxes. And I know that those potatoes will serve me for at least the next 5 months, 5 to 6 months.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful.
So, yeah, I feel like the art of preservation is massive. And I think it's something that people need to learn. Like even apples, we keep apples in the coldest room in the house for a good 6-7 months. And we just eat them whenever. People aren't really aware of these things. Like even lemons. This year is the first year I learned to make lemon cilantro, and I'm over the moon.
Oh, yum. I mean, yes.
Yeah. Art of preserving these things. It's great to share stuff with family and friends. But learn to preserve these things for yourself, for the long run, because you never know the way the world is going when you actually have to stop and become sustainable.
That is very true, very true. And as you said, storing the apples for 6 months, I think lots of people don't realize the apples that they'll pick from the supermarket shelves are often already that old. So they think, you know, some people may be hearing this and saying 6 months. But they do. They last quite a long time in the right conditions, don't they?
They do. We have pumpkins that have sat on the table for a year. They just sit on the table. That's it.
Yeah, lovely.
They're happy-go-lucky.
Yeah, they're good storers, pumpkins. Do you have a particular variety of pumpkin you find stores best?
I would say the Cinderella pumpkin. I love the Cinderella pumpkin. It's my favorite. I'm not a fan of eating pumpkins. I just like growing them because they're so pretty. I'm done looking at you, then I will cut them, divide them and give them to friends, or we freeze part of them.
Oh, yes. That's a good idea too.
Yeah.
So would that be your advice to anybody starting their gardening journey now, Penelope? Would you say that you'd advise them to learn the art of preservation?
I would ask them, if you're just starting their garden, to have patience. Have patience. Do not give up. It's okay if you kill a plant. I've killed plants. I've killed so many plants. But you know what? That's why they have so many seeds, so you can grow them again.
That's right. Yes, indeed. So keep trying.
Keep trying and learn to preserve your food. Preservation is a beautiful skill, which, if I'm not mistaken, everyone's grandparents, great-grandparents all did back in the day when we didn't have fridges. Everyone did preservation. So it's not an old skill. It's not a new skill, sorry. It's an old skill, but it's a great skill to have.
And very important too. Like you say, food security as well. It's best to know.
Correct.
Indeed. So before we sign off, Penelope, could you please share with us how our listeners can find out a bit more about you and your garden? Where can they find you?
Absolutely. So I have an Instagram account. It's called as Queen Penelope's Patch. And they can follow me there. If they have any questions, they require any gardening help, just shoot me a message. And I'm always happy to take a look. I'll probably ask you for a photograph if you tell me my plant is a disease. So just send me a photograph. I'll look at it. I'll give you my advice, tell you what I think. I will cheer you when you have your wins in the garden. And when you have your failures, I will stand by you and say, you know what? That plant was a stupid plant anyway. Let's do another one.
Wonderful, wonderful. So some gardening support also. And for anyone who has not yet seen Penelope's Instagram page at Queen Penelope's Patch, I think you should definitely jump on and have a look at the amazing things she's growing. But the photographs are absolutely divine. Penelope, I think you'd have some luck trying your hand at some professional photography too.
I've thought about it. I can't say I haven't thought about it, but...
Vibrant, the colors are rich. They're truly wonderful.
The produce speaks for itself.
perfect. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Penelope. You've been a real wealth of knowledge and I've absolutely loved chatting with you. I truly appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Gemma. You are awesome and I wish you the best. Have fun in your garden.
Oh, thank you. And likewise. You've been listening to How I Grow, produced by The Seed Collection in Melbourne, Australia. It's our aim to make gardening more accessible to more people, and this podcast is one of the many ways in which we're doing that. If you don't already know who we are, jump online and visit www.theseedcollection.com.au. You'll find a treasure trove of gardening information, as well as a huge range of seeds and garden supplies and accessories. That address again is www.theseedcollection.com.au. Thanks for listening.